On another exciting episode of the Animation Deliberation Podcast, we are episode 4 into Demon Slayer Season 3, and we are fans of how quick this action is picking up. We're going to talk about that and much more about these ads we have no control over.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back to another episode of Animation Deliberation, the podcast where we take action, animation, and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. We are your hosts. I am the Raspy Zuhara Lee.
I'm J. Scotty St. Clair.
And I am Andrew Rogers.
And as you can see, I mostly lost my voice at Ali and Ramin's wedding. Congratulations. Super happy for you guys. But that's not going to stop me from enjoying this episode and doing my best to talk about it. So, glad we're here. How are you guys feeling?
Better than you. No, I'm feeling great. I mean, this episode was just... It was the definition of give me everything I want, but give me more, please. Like, I wanted to turn on this next episode, even though it doesn't exist yet, because it was just, it's the middle of the story, and we're only on the fourth episode. Like, they took off to the races. I expected it to maybe ramp down at the end of the episode. No, I don't think we're doing that. I think we are just careening for the rest of the season. So, excited, to say the least.
Yeah, we're kind of in our non-spoiler section, so I'm going to do my best to kind of, like, dance around, but... I did appreciate how the action certainly picked up, and I agree with what you said, Andrew. We seemed to be like right in the middle of the action. But with that being said, I did find myself like, I think this is one of those episodes where it's like, I did want to get more of the story, and I found myself gravitating towards the beginning of the episode and the end of the episode because I felt like those did more to service the story. But, you know, there was some satisfying action in the middle. It just was one of those where it's like, if I could have watched this episode in conjunction with another one, I think I would have been a little more satisfied as a whole, but still a great entry in the season. And the momentum and the pace definitely has picked up.
Yeah. The pace of splitting up the fights has been interesting. I'm not going to get too much into it because we're in the early stages of this. I'm going to continue with the shot that I called last week. In regards to, it's either going to be a retreat, recover, and re-engage type of ordeal at some point, or they're going to like spread out these episodes over the 11, but have more backstory heavy ones. So I'm interested to see which one they do, because I'd be impressed, very impressed, if it's just like nonstop action between here until the end of episode 11.
Yeah.
And boy, seems do we like have action to talk about.
Yeah. Yes.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
And with that, we are ready to talk about Season 3, Episode 4. Thank you, Tokito.
Yes, indeed. Let's start things off with the synopsis. Though Muichiro beheads the fish demon, it does not die until he slashes the vase on its back. When Kotetsu begs him to save Kanemori and Haganazuka, he initially ignores him to protect the village until he remembers Kaguya's advice about trivial events triggering his memories to come back, prompting him to take Kotetsu and find the two swordsmiths. Tanjiro realizes that each of the four demons represent an emotion. He is currently facing the demon of joy. Irogi, Nezuko, and Ginya struggle against... Oh, excuse me. He is currently facing the demon of joy, Irogi. Nezuko and Ginya struggle against Karaku, the demon of pleasure, Sekido, the demon of anger, and Aizetsu, the demon of sorrow. Genya confuses them with his unusual durability against fatal wounds while Nezuko burns Karaku with her blood and uses his own wind against him, blasting him away. Sekiro immobilizes her by stabbing the demon's neck and shocking her.
Tanjiro is unable to use Orochi's flight to reach Nezuko and Genya. Tanjiro is able to use Orochi's flight to reach Nezuko and Genya. He avoids Sekiro's attacks by using Orochi's foot, which cannot conduct the electricity being made with the same cells. He frees Nezuko, who protects him from Sekiro, but both are incapacitated when Karaku returns and hits them with his winds. More fish demons attack the village as Mitsuri makes her way to rescue the swordsmiths.
Getting a lot of Game of Thrones vibes with this, where there was like multiple stories happening at the same time, and then it was a matter of just like picking your favorite. And the whole thing with Genya was definitely very fascinating to me, because we already had the secret of like, how did his tooth come back? So although we didn't get the answers, I'm intrigued. And it was a matter of picking your favorite, finding out which tempo matched for you with which villain you were most interested in. But they did bring it back together very quick, which I appreciated, because having Mitsuri join at the end of this would have been like a little more confusing to keep up with. I like that it's going to be more team efforts and seeing a lot of the cooperation as opposed to maintaining it. So it was fun for this episode, but I'm glad that this whole seeing five different perspectives isn't going to be a constant.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison. And I liked what you said about kind of like picking your favorite that kind of matched your sensibilities or your tempo. And I agree with you. You know, I talked about how the beginning of the episode, especially getting to spend that time with Muichiro, and I'm really enjoying the, I mentioned it last week, but the animation style of bringing back the 3D modeling with the fish monsters, but like the way they're designed and their eyes just kind of like look off in different directions, plus the sound design, like it's just like gross enough to where I'm like, yeah, I'm all in on this. This is great. But in terms of the middle of the episode, I did gravitate towards Genya and the demon that he was going up against as well. The demon of sorrow. Yeah. Just his whole demeanor and disposition. Like I wanted to kill you so you would die instantly. And like, how sad is it that you can't die instantly? Like I was trying to do you a mercy. And I talked about how this episode might have focused more heavily on action to the disservice of the story maybe, but there were some really interesting tidbits with Genya. Like he was reciting what was recognized as the Amida Sutra, which I'm not entirely familiar with, but I, from my understanding, it relates to some Buddhist readings. So, and the demon even recognized like, oh, how devout are you? So it was, interesting to learn about more about his character, like in that moment of action. And outside of that, like one of the standout parts of the episode, just in terms of like the shocking visual, no pun intended, I totally didn't mean that, but when the when Sekiro stabbed Nezuko through the neck and proceeded to shock her, like that was just brutal, and I kind of lost my breath at that moment. I was like, oh my gosh, this is brutal.
Yeah, I don't know what it says about my sensibilities, but I'm going to talk about the one demon I feel like we haven't talked about, the demon of pleasure, and that fight with Kuraka and Nezuko, I think, is my jaw-dropping moment of her ripping her own arm off to get the blood on him, to burn him, and then that just kick through the chin. Like, oh, I kind of forgot that Nezuko is kind of like Deku and is big on the kicks and just absolutely taking people's heads off with that. Honestly, yeah. I was like, oh, beast mode Nezuko's back, let's go. And just... I don't know, the way that Karaku just had that vile pleasure in terms of the way that he could beat on people and the way that he could torture them. I don't know, it just drew me in some concerned way that I absolutely loved it. And I mean, yeah, everything you said about Genya, absolutely over the top and fantastic. And all of the action was great. Like I loved getting to see Tanjiro problem solve on the fly. That's, you know, no secret, we love that. There was one thing that I desperately realized I was missing at the end of this episode though, and that was breathing forms. We did not see our Mist Hashira or Tanjiro or anyone use any of their breathing forms or powers. And I kept thinking to myself as Tanjiro was trying to fight this demon in the air, like, hey, maybe use Hinokami Kagura. Maybe some fire would burn some wings, or maybe use the water breathing. Like, seeing none of that just kind of was, it not made me forget what world we were in, but it felt more like a regular demon fighting anime, whereas one of the huge draws to Demon Slayer is the beauty and finesse of the breathing styles.
Yeah, the artistic painterly look of everything is definitely kind of the highlight. It's what stands out about the series from a design perspective. I want to go back to the Nezuko fight a little bit, because I do want to say that was probably my favorite moment. I feel bad for everybody that was around me in the plane and super happy that someone wasn't like directly in the middle seat. Because despite how exhausted I was, I could not contain myself with how exciting that was. Like when she was spinning around to rip his arm off and the way that she used the flame, as you mentioned, I was just giddy. I was like trying not to be vocal about it, but my body and my hands were definitely all over the place. And I was audible when she got the staff down her throat. I was like, ooh, mm-hmm. Which rounds, like, all right, everyone's got their headphones in. You probably can't hear over that crying baby anyways. So I am hesitant to watch anime on flights at times, but this was one where I was like, I gotta do it. Like, I can't wait any longer than this. I'm not gonna have the energy when I get home. So that scene action wise definitely was a highlight. And Tanjiro at one point told her not to transform. I know she has more of a power up than her chibi mood, obviously, but is she still shy of where she was when she fought Dobby? Does she have like as long of a horn right now? Or are we just like in a happy middle? Like action ready, but not as demonic.
I do feel like that horn might be smaller. I'm just wondering if there's some degree of possibly she's learning to control it or something, or she's going to attack our humans. I don't know. I don't want to get into... There definitely are clues, I think, hiding in places, but I hate using intros and outros for context of the show. But if any listeners really want to get their answers, I'm like, I think there's going to be actual answers to that, and I'm excited to I hope Mitsuri is actually part of the answer in terms of where she goes with her power from here.
Yeah,
but I think we're probably going to get some acknowledgement to her being different this time.
Yeah, Andrew, you and I are exactly on the same page. I was thinking of a certain still from the intro that it kind of ends on to, like, that's, I won't spoil it entirely, and I can't say for certain that's where it's going, but that is what makes me think it's more of Nezuko learning to control this power rather than her being unleashed or potentially attacking her allies. But I did want to go back to, I appreciate all the love for the Nezuko fight because it's, you know, totally deserved, but you mentioned some of the aspects of Tanjiro's fight, and I did feel like overall that was the part of the episode that kind of lost my interest a little bit, but I did like the aspects that you brought up, that we got to see Tanjiro doing what he does best. I had the same thoughts of you. I was like, where are these breathing forms? Why aren't we seeing any of this? It kind of seems like he's letting himself get beat up. But having him have that opportunity to take a moment to figure things out. Oh, I was right. This demon is lighter because there's no way he'd be able to fly without that wingspan. And then when he eventually used Irogi's foot to block the lightning, and even Sekido was like, wow, this guy has the ability to like think on his feet in battle. Like, to get that acknowledgement, I was like, okay, the frustrations that I was having with Tanjiro in this episode were kind of answered by the end of the episode. So I did appreciate that aspect.
Especially because there was a point where he was even saying, like, I don't know what to do right now. What am I supposed to do? And then to be able to see him act as quickly. And even from the episode last week where he just quickly analyzed that, oh, if he's fast enough to avoid a Hashira, then he must be one of the uppers. Like, that was the indication for him, and was able to like act quick. So I think he's getting more used to his body and more confident in his form, because even last week I was like, how hurt is he right now, right off the bat? And he seems to just kind of like had the wind knocked out of him and is just kind of like back on his feet and ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of like, I think one of my favorite scenes of Tanjiro ever is from the Entertainment District, wherein he was throwing the bean bags at Gyutaro to like throw off his sense of smell so he could poison him. And that whole time we were like, why is he running? This seems very against his character. And it was instead one of the smartest things he's ever done. So to see that through line is just top tier writing of just here's how you do a character and remember what they're capable of the whole time. So,
and we're still in episode 4.
Oh yeah. He still has a lot of problems to solve. Don't get us wrong there.
But from a writing perspective, it's fascinating the buildup of prepping what our character is analyzing for stuff that we don't even know that's going to happen yet.
Mm-hmm.
So those, we don't know how many seeds have been planted, even if we're breaking down the opener and closer. And that's the fun part of it. And, you know, you got to commend the writers for that. I always get that and condemn mixed up. So I just want to make sure I didn't.
They're very different things, actually.
Yes. Polar opposites.
That's hilarious.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I do want to talk a little bit more about Muichiro, given the fact that like the episode is titled "Thank You, Tokito." So I could not help but kind of go in with some expectations. I was like, "Oh, okay, this is going to be the Mist Hashira heavy episode," and ended up not being. But they did, you know, make the most of his appearance in the beginning of the episode by really starting to flesh out what exactly his situation is. And I'll be completely honest. When we started to get the revelations of the amnesia factor, I had some concerns. I was like, oh, I do not like amnesia as a writing device. It seems kind of lazy to me. And it's like, I kind of preferred this character if he was just that cocky and confident and like kind of apathetic, if that's just who he was. And what kind of brought it all the way back around for me, and I was like, okay, you redeemed yourself. And I'm willing to like, you know, go with this is... when Kaguya said, "This mist in your brain will be removed," I was like, "Okay, he's the Mist Hashira. He's got this mist in his brain. Like, I'll buy it and I'll go with it." So,
does he then become the Clarity Hashira after he gets his memories back?
Well, he is related to the sun breather, so you know.
Yeah, the sun's got to come out eventually.
Yeah, the sun burns the fog away.
Yeah, that whole scene with. Is it Kaguya? Was the young
the master? Oh, not Kotetsu.
Kotetsu, thank you.
Yeah.
Just that whole little scene of him like hugging Muichiro and being like, "Thank you so much. You saved me. Like, I need your help." It was just, it was amazing. And then having the jokes as well in there, giving us that little bit of brevity that we always love to talk about. With I shouldn't have called you a seaweed head. When'd you call me a seaweed head? And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, when did he say that? And to find out it was behind his back was just even better, because it's like, oh, okay, that's probably why I don't remember what's going on.
Yeah.
Man, I'm trying to remember the point that I wanted to bring up now. Oh, I had been saying how much I wanted to watch, like rewatch the scene where we meet all of the Hashira for the first time. And right. I did make the time to finally go back and do that just to pay a little more attention to Muichiro. And I was right on the fact that it seemed like he was just very zoned out from the meeting, because he was like, oh, the clouds look different today. What kind of bird just made that sound? Like, that was his dialogue throughout the whole time. Mm-hmm. But when Tanjiro was excused and he ran because he wanted to headbutt the wind guy for hitting him so much, Muichiro grabs like a pebble and flicks it, hits Tanjiro in the perfect spot that knocks him out. And he's like, "You don't speak over the master. Like, you don't disrespect the master."
Oh, right.
So that added a little more context to this scene of like, what does the master seems to mean more to him than maybe a lot of the other ones do, because he has like an ability in his voice to just make people feel comfortable with him. But knowing that there is this amnesia factor and that they have more history, like, I want to know like what the master actually saved him from, essentially. Mm. And if he has a greater respect in the sense that he owes his life to him more than just working his way up to the ranks to be where he's at.
Yeah, and his relationship to the master seems to be like a source of his own like self-worth, because I did appreciate when he was having kind of the inner dialogue with himself, like, do I go and try to rescue these two swordsmiths like Kotetsu's urging me to do? If I do that, am I opening the whole village up to potential attack? But he's like, no, I can do this. Like, I have been chosen by the master. So I did appreciate that moment, and it kind of like maybe that's one of the reasons like I've just kind of gravitated towards this character from day one. I had kind of forgotten about the scene, so I'm glad you kind of refreshed my memory there. But he does kind of have this like detached coolness to him. And I mean that like, you know, both cool as in being emotionally detached and cool as just being like, he's cool. it does remind me a little bit of like Doctor Strange a little bit, like in the grand calculus of the multiverse, like, you know, what do I have to do to save more lives, and it may involve sacrifice there, but he was able to kind of like have that moment and rectify it within himself that he could do both. And I like characters like that.
Yeah, and I think it leans heavily toward, okay, we weren't supposed to like this character, here's their redemption, let's see where it goes.
Yeah, and another big part of that scene was the amount of people who were ready to kill Nezuko, with Rengoku being the loudest of them all, very adamant on it. So one of the things that the master told them, or told Tanjiro, was like, prove it, like, prove that she's worth keeping. So I really like the fact, I also forgot that Otokoraki had said that if Nezuko had ever harmed a human, then Otokoraki, Giyu, and Tanjiro would all have to perform, was it seppuku?
Like, right.
Kill themselves?
Yep.
I was like, oh, I forgot that there was like multiple people's lives at stake, you know, for keeping her tempered. So I like this opportunity to really, you know, prove to all these Hashira why she's worth keeping around. That, if you have the chance, like, just watch those two episodes of that whole trial, because it definitely brought a whole new perspective on watching this again, because it had been a little while.
Sure. I think it's also interesting to watch back and talk back on that trial now that we really know the Hashira, because at that time, that was really our first introduction to everyone except Giyu and Shinobu. I think those were the only two that we had really seen up to that point. So now, like, you saying Rengoku was not the happiest about it, and then having Rengoku be the savior and like trust these kids implicitly is totally different. And to know who Tengen was, who was a mystery in that episode, like, didn't really say much of anything, to now have this full
appreciation. Oh, he was very vocal as well.
Oh,
he was like, I'll decapitate her now in the flashiest way. Like, why are we having this conversation? Like, him and Rengoku are ready to jump.
Yeah. And it's so interesting now that we know pretty much all of them in some capacity except the Cloud Hashira. I think he's the only one that still has... Is Cloud the one that's crying all the time?
He's Stone.
Sorry. Why did I think he was Cloud? Regardless, I think he's the only one that has any real mystery left to him. Pretty much everyone else has gotten some semblance of screen time and personality put to them. So yeah it's totally a great time to go back and talk about what their initial intentions were.
It is interesting. It's just interesting to dissect that scene like in retrospect, because like hearing that it was Rengoku and Tengen that were so like unabashedly against Tanjiro and Nezuko, and then they end up being like some of the ones that are most endeared to them. That is interesting. I definitely have to go back and watch that scene because, like, in my memory, it stuck out to me that it was like the wind Hashira and the serpent Hashira kind of came across as like the assholes to me. Like, that's what kind of stuck out to me. Like, these are the unlikable guys. Like, everybody else, I'm willing to like at least give a chance. They seem like they have like some code of honor amongst them, but they came across as a lot more like cocky and kind of like haughty.
Yeah, Shinobu was trying to like orchestrate the trial and everyone just kept talking over her, and it was the love Hashira that was like, no, do we have to do this? Like, why are we doing this? And Gyo was just his quiet stoic self, but literally like nobody was opposed to killing her. They were just all like, he broke the rules, like this should be over.
Fair.
it was wild. Coming back to the episode at hand, I do like this race against the clock that we have going on too. Because I'm forgetting the name of the gentleman that's polishing the sword right now, but the fact that he has this 3-day, 3-night thing that can't be interrupted, and Kotetsu is like, we have to protect him. Like, he's working on the sword right now. So not only do we have to protect the villagers and deal with all these splits, now we have multiple buffed out Magikarps that are invading the village. And clearly the swordsmiths are not capable of fighting on their own, so... it'll be interesting seeing the balance of this all.
First a Mecha Arceus and now buff Magikarp. What is happening here? I will say, I hope at least a little bit that they give a reason why they said, oh, this is supposed to be a 3-day process. Because if it turns out that it's only one night, but because Haganazuka's so buff now, he can like polish this sword in one night, it feels a little heavy-handed of like, why wasn't it just polishable in one night? Why did we have to go through this, like, tease that it's going to be a 3-night thing and then turn out to only be one night because he is so determined to sharpen Tanjiro's sword? Like, I still want that sword to get done. I still want to see what the mystery of this old weapon is. But it feels... feels like an interesting word choice. And we talk about their writing being great all the time, so I'm sure it will pay off, but that's my one question mark of, did we need that caveat thrown in there that he has to go for 3 days straight? Because I love the idea that he can't stop. I think that's super interesting in and of itself, that he's like, if he stops, it's all over. Like, the fact that it has to be a continuous process seems super like, okay, we have to protect him from the demons. But the idea of it being continuous over 3 days intrigues me way more than it being continuous over one night.
Yeah. Do we know how many days it's been already? Has it just been
I think the one afternoon into the evening
so far that he started the process? Okay, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I just wanted to confirm. But I guess the other thing that I kind of wanted to highlight is, like, we had kind of postulated about what the different fronts of this battle were going to be, especially knowing that Mitsuri was going to be a part of the proceedings. But now at the end of this episode, we have a little more clarity. It definitely seems like Muichiro is going to be facing off against Gyoko in some form while trying to protect Haganazuka. And then it seems like Mitsuri is going to kind of fill in for him in terms of protecting the village, because Zuhair, as you said, it does not seem like the swordsmiths are up to the task. They're trying their damnedest, but, you know, they're better at making the swords than they are using their spears. And then of course we will have our trio of Ginya, Tanjiro, and Nezuko handling Hantengu and all his various emotional forms there. So again, I think the Game of Thrones comparisons are kind of appropriate, and we'll see how it affects the pacing and the momentum. And yeah, I think you mentioned at the beginning of the episode too, all that said, we still have to factor in some backstories here, or so I expect or suspect rather.
Yeah. And I did like the little nod of Mitsuri not actually still being in the village, but that she's still fully left, but because she doesn't know where the village was, she's just like, oh, I was conveniently nearby. That's super cool. Like, this crow is having to lead her to it. I'm like, that's actually kind of a fun acknowledgement that no one knew where this was. So she could have been right next to it and had no idea the whole time, because she presumably also had to get on someone's back and go with a blindfold for miles and miles.
So do you think that they're breaking protocol by just taking her straight to it, or Hashira know where the village is?
I did ask myself the question of, are they breaking the protocol? So maybe the Hashira, I don't know, her dialogue made it sound like she didn't previously know where it was, but now she's going in a direction.
Yeah, I thought they said something about not even the crows had full knowledge of where it's at, but that was kind of my impression, is that the crow knew where the action was happening, even if Mitsuri didn't. And she was like, oh, how convenient that I happen to be stationed so close by. But, you know, thinking about the like pairing of Hashira that we got here, like, is their main thread the fact that they both have the sassiest crows? Because like it certainly seems like it. Their crows have the most personality we've seen out of we've seen some pretty sassy crows now that I think about it.
I honestly think all the crows are just kind of sassy. Like, I think that's their whole shtick, is like, hey, listen to me, fool, I'm a crow. Like, I don't know why I said it like that. I'm a crow. The muscle mice could never.
I'm a crow, mother. Don't you ever forget.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, crows are about to throw some bars. Yeah. I do think my last note that I really wanted to ask you guys about, I'm loving this development that we're getting out of Genya. I think there's a lot of questions, and I don't have much to say on that. The one thing I have to say, can either of you take him seriously?
For who?
Genya. Because I'm just
I can take him seriously, but he did have the one line of dialogue that I was just like, oh, so predictable. And he's just like, because I'm the man that's going to kill you. I was like, I was reciting that like a good 10 seconds before he got it out.
Well, the main reason I can't take him seriously is because I'm just like, Bakugo, what are you doing here? Because it's like that voice actor has done other roles. He's using the Bakugo voice for this. Like, it is just the same voice.
I think that's what makes me like it more, because Bakugo is like one of my favorite characters. Like, it added a whole other level of crazy to Genya that I wasn't thinking before, like, this level of dialogue came out. Because now that I know he has some sort of speedy teleportation and, you know, healing up aspect to it, like, he seems batshit crazy, and I love adding that voice to it, because the only other thing I can think of at the top of my head is Connie from Attack on Titan that has the same voice actor.
Oh, I always forget that Connie does. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, I had to bring it up because it really stuck out this episode. It's like, oh no, that's 100% Bakugo's voice actor. And like, I do agree, I think it's endearing me more to Genya. Because when he was first on screen, like in the early seasons, just being the angsty character, I was like, who is this guy? But now that I'm like getting him fully fleshed out, I think the voice is helping a lot, because it's no secret that a voice can do a lot to bring you into, you know, some specific characters. I'm looking at you, Aizawa's voice actor.
Yeah. Well, on that note, talking about how voices can bring people in, I encourage all the listeners, bring your voice into the fold. Let us know what you're thinking. Send us some feedback. You can send us a written email or record yourself and send us a voice memo via our email, animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com, as well as a host of other places via social media.
And all of our social media platforms that you can find us on is Facebook and Instagram, Animation Deliberation, and on Twitter at AnimationDelib1.
Very good. Any plugs that we need to make the people aware of before we hit the road?
I couldn't do anything else if I wanted to.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, bud.
Yeah. I'll just mention real quickly, Multiversal News. That's a show that's been about 5 weeks in the making now, but continue to want to let people know about it. If you're a fan of like blockbuster films and fandoms, go check out what we're doing over at Multiversal News, or Multiverse News rather. It's one of the Stranded Panda shows, and also Barry on Pandavision, Barry season 4, the final season. We are covering that every week on Pandavision. Other than that, I want to remind everybody, we've got the partnership with BlendJet. So if the BlendJet sounds like it's something that could benefit your life, and how could it not? Just remember to go to BlendJet.com and use our code STAYWHELMED12 to get 12% off your order.
Thanks, and if it's everybody, not for you, be sure to use it as a gift.
Hey, perfect. Yeah. So it's the gift that keeps on giving. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. That's TOO, N-I-N.
And as always, stay whelmed.
Later, seaweed heads. Muscle, muscle.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/svchat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.